Great. Okay. Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you will find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So welcome, Darcy L., a compulsive overeater from Burlington, North Carolina. Hi, Darcy.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, it's great to be here. I know I've spoke at this meeting once before, so it's great to be back, and thank you for asking, Jessica, and thanks everyone for doing its service. Appreciate it. Okay. My first sponsor said never say no to service, and this is the one I happen to like the least, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. Okay, so my name is Darcy L. I'm a girl from New Jersey, and I'm living in North Carolina now. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. That means I am blessed with entire abstinence from my alcoholic foods and compulsive eating behaviors, and have completed the 12 steps through the Big Book with my sponsor. I was given the gift of a spiritual awakening. God's doing for me what I could never do for myself. And he gifts me daily. You know, every day I get a gift, you know, based on my spiritual condition, another day of freedom from the obsession with the food, you know, provided I work the steps every day. So yesterday was 2 years and 8 months of entire abstinence. Maintaining over 100-pound weight loss. And I'm going to share my experience, my strength, and hopefully there'll be some hope in there. My sharing, my story, any opinions that might sneak out are mine and do not represent OA as a whole. Okay. So what I want to do now is share what it was like, a bit about what it was like in the disease, before the disease, and I've been as high as 330 pounds, and I've gained and lost over 100 pounds at least four times. I don't really know why, but I was born with this disease of compulsive overeating. I can remember as early as 4 years old, feeling an effect, like safety and comfort from sugary kinds of foods. And I always noticed what the other family members were eating, you know, never felt like there was enough. I would sneak around and take food to bed with me at night to eat, mainly sweet treats and bread. I became an artist at falsifying the bottom of containers and then lying about it. I'd fall asleep with wrappers and crumbs in my bed. I'd lie when my mother would ask what happened to all the whatever and blame my sisters. Oh, that worked with one of them because she had the same issue I have, but the other one, no. I was ridiculed starting in kindergarten. I was a fat child in the 60s. There was very few of us around. I was picked on as I got older. I was always, you know, with the exception of kickball, I was always picked last in sports. I stole money from my parents for food. This is where the disease brought me. It didn't matter as long as I could get the food. I stole food from houses I babysat at, candy from the, they actually had penny candy. Now, you know, I'm old. Dug food out of the trash. Used to dig food out of the trash. As the disease progressed, I used to pass out from eating mass quantities of sugar. I ate all day long. You know, I was a grazer for sure, with, you know, periodic binges. I'd eat until I felt sick. I remember crying myself to sleep more than once, wondering what was wrong with me. You know, why couldn't I stop? I wasn't a dieter. People talk about everything, you know, all these things they did to try to lose weight. I didn't do that. In 1979 and again in 1983, I actually went to OA. Friends brought me both times, the first one in Ohio, the second one in New Jersey. And the G word was mentioned. And I used that as an excuse not to stay. In November 1987, I was over 267 pounds. I went to OA in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. That's my home group, and South Jersey intergroup is my home intergroup from back then. I went with my roommate. I was supporting her. I was very unhappy, though. You know, I was unhappy with where I was. I felt like crap. Yeah. And the speaker, there was a speaker. Yeah, it was a speaker meeting. And the speaker shared, and I stayed afterwards. She told my story, told a good portion of my story, you know, the trying to stop, wanting to stop, not being able to stop, not knowing why I couldn't stop. And I didn't know at the time that it was a disease, you know. I wanted what she had, like I mentioned, especially what the thinner people had. And I could relate to how she used the food to hide from life and not feel anything. I had a sense of belonging. I wasn't happy about that, though. You know, I didn't want to belong to a bunch of compulsive overeaters. But y'all were my people. And it stuck, you know. I knew I was home. You know, they say, welcome home. I knew that that is where I belong. So that was something different, because I really never felt like I belonged anywhere. I worked the steps back in November of 1987 is when this happened, right before Thanksgiving. And I worked the steps through the Alcoholics Anonymous big book. There was no other literature other than AA 12 and 12 and the Brown Book, with stories of recovered compulsive eaters in there. I lost over 100 pounds, 124 pounds. And I maintained that weight loss for almost 12 years. But here's the thing. I depended on the people in the rooms, the skinny people, my intellect, that's my opinion, meetings, literature. I did lots and lots and lots of service at the group level. Those were my higher powers. I did not have a conception of God. I did not rely on, you know, that type of a higher power. So I didn't rely on many of the spiritual principles in the program. I didn't enlarge my spiritual life. I did not sponsor, except back then we had food sponsors. I would do that. I rarely used a sponsor, although I had one. I did not call people. I picked and chose what steps I would work, like a Chinese menu. So you can probably guess what happened. It took a while, but after I had moved about 12 and a half years in the program, I moved to North Carolina. And about a year after being there, I picked up the sugar. And that's one of my major alcoholic foods. And that's, for me, what starts and kicks the disease off. But I kept coming to meetings. You know, I knew the answer was in the meetings. I came to the meetings where I live. There wasn't very many meetings. I went from a place that had 35 meetings a week to one that had three. And then it went down to two. And I relapsed off and on for over a decade in the rooms, you know. I did. My husband died. I became despondent. And I ate and ate and ate. I was trying to kill myself with food, is what I inventoried later. I went up to 330 pounds. And I decided to get having gastric bypass would be a good idea. But I didn't have brain surgery. So I knew it was a disease of the mind. I mean, I Well, I didn't really understand that part. I knew I had an allergy to certain foods, but at that time, I really didn't get the mental obsession. But I didn't have brain surgery. And so after, I was very, you know, very, I followed the rules. I was very successful, lost almost 180 pounds, kept most of it off for 7 years. And in 2017, I picked up the sugar again. But the disease had progressed, you know? And it started slow. I mean, you can't eat a lot of volume when you've had this surgery. And over, but so over the next 3 years, actually more like 4 years, I ended up going up to 254 pounds. Still no reliance on God. Still only self-reliance. I had major physical issues. My right knee was a mess. I had Achilles tendonitis, plantar fasciitis. I was gaining weight so fast I was falling down. My balance was off. So what happened? The first miracle happened. God put on the heart of a friend of mine from my old OA meeting in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, to text me the Zoom information for a Sunday 10 a.m. Big Book study. 3 days prior to that, I had left OA from in this area. I was done, you know? Of course, it wasn't me. It wasn't working. And I started to attend in August of 2021. And it was like my ears were unclogged. I put the sugar down again. So here I am doing it by myself again. But I heard what I needed to hear to realize how powerless I really was, you know? I attended a step one workshop hosted by the host of that meeting, and then the newcomers returning members meeting. I was in need of a sponsor. I posted my name. I was desperate. I couldn't stop eating. That night, November 12th, or actually 13th, 2021, I had fallen again backwards into my closet, and I could not get up. I was on my back like a turtle, and I couldn't get up. I had to pee. All the extra weight and joint issues made it very difficult. I finally rolled to my side, and I took like 6 or 7 knee steps to the bed while I was throwing my hands up in the air and screaming, "God help me, I can't do this anymore." Another miracle. I surrendered and finally asked God for help. I spoke with a fellow on November 13th who saw my posting for a sponsor who called me, and I started working with her right away. Went through the steps in 6 weeks, started sponsoring, and now I'll tell you how I did that. So now this is new. I've not done it like this before, but God put in my little heart to note some of the sentences from the Big Book that really spoke to me, that finally I got that I had a disease of the mind and an obsession, a mental obsession with a physical allergy triggered by the foods that start the craving. So step one, I know we have some newcomers. I should be able to say this, but I'm nervous. We admitted we were powerless over the food, that our lives had become unmanageable. So in the doctor's opinion, it talks about alcoholism as a disease with three parts: a physical allergy, which I like definitions, an abnormal reaction to my alcoholic foods, or a mental obsession, and a spiritual malady or illness. And the doctor also educates us in that writing about the addiction cycle. A mental obsession is a problem. This is the part I never got, is a problem with unwelcome thoughts and urges that keep coming into the mind to resist drinking or eating, even when the addict knows coming into the mind to eat. I'm sorry. Even when the addict knows and is aware of negative consequences. Well, I just shared about a whole lot of negative consequences. I couldn't stop eating once I picked up one bite of one of my alcoholic foods. I proved that for about a couple decades. The phenomenon of craving was always activated, always. I eat because I like the effect. the numbing, the comfort. I spent decades, like I mentioned, of my life chasing the feeling of ease and comfort that came when I started eating compulsively. The spiritual malady is why I eat compulsively. When I was living in the disease, all I cared about was getting. Where was my next bite? Where was the food going to come from? So I could feel that effect I mentioned. My experience is that I am prone to succumb to the desire to eat. My alcoholic, allergic foods, when I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. Or living in the bedevilments on page 52. So I wasn't sure I knew what the hell restless, irritable, and discontented was, so I looked up what they are. The definitions: restlessness is a form of neurosis. Neurosis is excessive and irrational anxiety or obsession. It's a sign of mental imbalance, meaning the root problem is in the mind itself. Bill picked a good word here. Synonyms for restless are uneasy, fidgety, on edge, tense, nervous, agitated, anxious, keyed up, impatient, and apprehensive.
That's 15
the opposite
minutes.
Is calm and peaceful. Okay, thanks. Irritable definition is having or showing a tendency to be easily annoyed or angry. Synonyms are touchy, grouchy, moody, grumpy. Sounds like the seven dwarfs. Ill-humored, gross, disagreeable, short-tempered. Discontented is dissatisfaction with one's circumstances. Synonyms that spoke to me were displeasure, unhappiness, resentment, envy, uneasiness, impatience, irritation, and annoyance. Opposite is contentment. So the other symptoms of spiritual malady: am I having trouble with personal relationships? Am I full of fear? Can I not control my emotional nature? Can I not make a living? Do I have a feeling of uselessness? Am I unhappy? Am I not real help to other people? When I finally surrendered and cried out to God for help, I was so desperate that I'd do anything. I had to give up any notion that I could figure it all out by picking and choosing which steps I would work. I had to surrender my will and realize and admit that my life was unmanageable. The solution is a psychic change, also known as a spiritual awakening, that comes about from working and living in the 12 steps. Okay. So what I learned that I never accepted and didn't get before was that the spiritual malady triggers the mental obsession, which results in me picking up the food, and the phenomenon of craving starts, and I can't stop. I can't stop once it starts. In Bill's story, I read this story finally with an open mind and the willingness to hear and identify with it. And so many times I could identify with how when he was picking up the alcohol, how I picked up the food, you know? I embraced this time around that it's my thinking. That's the problem. I can't trust my own thinking. In my desperation, I finally embraced the italicized sentence on page 12. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required for me to make a beginning. So there's several chapters that deal with step two. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And once there is a solution, and the summary of the problem on pages 21 to 22 emphasized for me that the mental obsession will always tell me that I can handle another bite, and it lies to me. It lies to me. I don't have the time, but I have a sheet of lies or disease tells me that's this long, 8x11. The appendix, it referenced the appendix in that step and on the spiritual experience. And I really appreciated that, that the educational variety was a totally acceptable way of getting to know and understand and experience an awakening. That I am aware that God's doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. My attitude and outlook on life has definitely been transformed. I now know that willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are essentials. In More About Alcoholism, this chapter deals with the mental obsession in general. It has what I thought was heartbreaking was that the four folks that they talk about had sobriety. And I certainly had abstinence several times, sometimes for years, and I gave it all up because I kept succumbing to that mental obsession. I relate most with the jaywalker. I knew the damage. I knew I was harming myself. I suffered through the joints and all kinds of issues when you have to drag around all that weight I had high blood pressure at a young age, lost half of my meniscus in my right knee because I was squatting and the extra 270 pounds or the 270 pounds squished it and tore it till it was irreparable. So I tried to burn this truth into my brain on page 43. The sentence, the alcohol at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. In We Agnostics, the parts that was so important to my spiritual growth was that I needed a spiritual experience to conquer the illness. God graced me with that on November 13th, 1987, and removed the obsession. So that was another miracle. In step two, all I needed to do was believe that I needed a higher power. I didn't have to figure out what the heck it was. I just needed to believe that. Page 46 to 48 or 48 to 51. The fact is that we have solved our problem. The consciousness of a presence of God today, my conception, nobody, thank God, told me what I had to believe, is today the most important fact of my life. The choice was clear. Either God is or he isn't. Okay, so step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him and how it works. I was all in this time. I was all in, accepted that I was finally like everyone else. I wasn't going to come up with a different way to recover from this disease. You know, the first requirement was that I was convinced, and I was convinced that my life run on self-will wasn't a success, that I was selfishness and self-centeredness and self-will run riot was the way I was in my whole disease and in my life. I had to have God's help. I took step three with my sponsor and a couple of other people. I actually recorded it in my own voice as a tool, and I often listen to pages 60 to 63, all of it, often, at least a couple times a week. Step four, courage. Made a fearless and searching and fearless small inventory of myself. Courage is the spiritual principle. I've been forgetting to say what they are. and how it works. I was ready. I wanted to change. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know? So I followed the directions that start on page 64. I had God now. So I brought him in on every, you know, the lists that you fill out for resentment and fear and sex conduct. And I would ask for his guidance and help. In the past, I never did that. I actually started to, due to the saying the sick man's prayer for my resentees and resentment prayer, you know, for if I had to for longer, depending on the severity of the resentment, I started forgiving first myself, which was amazing. And then I started to forgiving the people on the list. Not all of them, but I started. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I needed to do this to have a witness, you know, to practice humility. That's what I learned. I was totally honest about the inventory. Integrity is the spiritual principle here. And the step five promises came true for me. The fears fell away. I was delighted. I began to feel closer to God. I felt lighter. Just if that makes any sense. I ended up adding stuff after I went home for the hour. Step six. This is taking longer than I thought it would. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I prayed and finished the assignments my sponsor gave me. Willingness is the principle. And I felt that I was entirely ready. I wrote about where, this is the work I did. I wrote about where and how the defects that we identified, sponsor and I, manifested themselves in my life. And then what the defects were doing for me and how they were hurting me. I was willing to go to any length to change and become Darcy 2.0. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. I took action. This is what I was taught, which was something I never heard before. Step six and seven calls us to take actions to show God that we are truly willing to change. Principle is humility. These steps are a lifelong attitude of willingness to try to make progress I actually try to live this way, but I'm not perfect at any of this, in case you were wondering. In becoming the best person I can be, the kind that God would want me to be. So I started practicing, 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 living in the opposites of my character defects. The definition of humility for me is living with humility means putting the needs of others before my own. It's the honest desire to seek God's will. It's being teachable. Pride thinks who is right. Humility thinks what is right. In the 12 and 12 on page 70, I think it is, Bill writes that humility is at the core. Well, he doesn't write that. Bill Wilson writes, the attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of every single step. And daily I try to grow in humility through trying to help others, through doing God's will, a bunch of other stuff. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I appreciate it on page 76. It said, remember, it was agreed at the beginning that you were willing to go to any lengths. So I made a list.
5 minutes.
And, oh God, okay. Okay, so I made a list and then I made direct amends. Okay, now I'm skipping to step 10. I had good intentions. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I used a skill set I learned in steps 4 to 9 in working step 10 to grow daily and turn my life and will over to God. My experience since November 2021 show that being human, I don't do this perfectly, that the principles, the steps are guide the progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. I feel like I'm living in the world of the spirit when I work step 10. I feel peace and connection to God, to others. I do spot checks inventory, sometimes minute to minute, try to set right any mistakes, grow in understanding, identify the defects, pray to be willing to have them removed after I become entirely willing, and make amends if I need to. I try to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. These crop up. I ask God at once to remove them. I discuss with another fellow as soon as I can. I talked about the bedevilments. I answer those questions, yes or no. If it's yes, I see that's a gauge for me to do a 10th step. If I'm restless, irritable, discontent, I know I need to do a 10th step because I'll talk myself out of those suckers. Love and tolerance of others is our code. My love for others shows in kindness, being compassionate, accepting others as they are, living with more tolerance. This is the first one God removed from me because I was intolerant, Darcy. It shows me being patient, understanding, and quiet. Nobody needs all the opinions I used to give. I strive to live this way every day. You know, it's a one day at a time thing. In living and working step 11, spiritual awareness is the principle there. I follow the instructions in the big book. I do my nightly review in the morning. I answer the questions I just mentioned about selfishness, etc. Do I need to make an apology? What could I have done better? This question of what could I do for others? That question helps me align myself to live in the action of fulfilling our real purpose, which is on page 77 in Into Action. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I also include my gratitude prayer in my nightly review. I share it with 3 or 4 people. As I start the day, I read the middle of page 86 on awakening paragraph up to and including the end of page 88. Not every day, but a whole lot of days. And I have a little 9-minute meditation that reads it for me if I wish with a little prayer. And if I face indecision, I try to pause. I'm still in kindergarten on that one. I pray the Serenity Prayer, the 3rd-step prayer, the 7th-step prayer, the St. Francis prayer, and then I go visualize that I am curling up in God's hands in a little fetal position. And sometimes I ask a question, I thank him, I say hi, and I listen. I just listen. Silent. Listen. For me, God is in the silence. There are many 11-step meetings listed on the OA website. I do use the For Today, the workbook, or the meditation books. I could do better on meditation. Nobody told me in sponsoring 12-step service, right? Service to others, had a spiritual awakening. I mentioned I had one of them. tried to carry this message. That's what I try to do through this talks, even though I know I'm talking like a mile a minute. I try to practice the principle in all my affairs. Some of the sponsor that I've been, service that I've been involved in is sponsoring. Nobody told me that could be uncomfortable and make fodder for lots of 10 steps. Outreach calls, I take 10 steps, I read at meetings, I speak, I do Zoom security, I moderate meetings. I pick clothes up off the floor when I'm at TJ Maxx. I put the carts away. The first service I ever tried to do for somebody else was I offered a handicapped lady help putting her groceries in her car. And she pretty much told me to go to hell that she could do it herself. So that's what I've got. I mean, it's been an honor. I'm going to have to edit that sucker. And thank you for letting me share.